Welcome back to the Green Front. As any regular listeners of the show know, my two passions are, well, besides my husband and daughter, climate change and waste. Started out with Trash Talk features back in, gosh, last century, 1997, Earth Day. Did that feature on KCBS in San Francisco for 10 years and then realized not only is our solid waste a real problem that mainstream media is pretty much ignoring, but what's coming out of our tailpipes, greenhouse gases causing global warming, which is what we called it then, is the biggest waste challenge of all. And so as someone who's just always deplored waste, my husband can vouch for that. He's listening to the show today for the first time because we're on vacation. He has time to. He's the one who got me into this when he was showing some wasteful habits when we first got married. Anyway, that's the background. I am really excited to welcome to the show a fellow waste watcher, Jonathan Zaidman. He is executive director of a group I hadn't heard of before, but we're going to find out all about it. I believe you say one-on-one. Is that right, Jonathan?
The one-to-one movement.
One-to-one movement. Great. This was something that, as I just mentioned, D.R. Tucker really trolls the Internet for all things green. He sent me this article last week, and it just so happens I was on the road down in your neck of the woods, San Diego, Los Angeles, did a road trip in my plug-in Prius, so didn't burn too much CO2. But it, being in restaurants and bars where I don't usually frequent, don't usually do that at home so much, I couldn't believe two things. One, how many arguments I got into people who were sitting at the bar about climate change, and two, how every drink that I ordered, including water I didn't necessarily ask for, came with straws. And my family knows that whenever this happens and I have a moment, I always say something to the waiter, and if I have a few minutes and they'll indulge me, I ask for the manager and say, why are you serving straws with water, with juice, with, you know, anything and everything, whether we want it or not? And then I saw from DR that you guys have started a campaign against Applebee's. I've never been inside of an Applebee's, but I suppose you're choosing them because they're one of the larger chains across America and hoping that they can change their ways, and as they do, others will follow. What's going on with straws all of a sudden? Where did the scourge come from? Is it a new phenomenon, or, I mean, that it's so prevalent, or have I just not been out much?
Yeah, I think it's pretty common. I mean, we live in a disposable culture, and we throw away a lot of things. We brought up this campaign, which we call The Last Straw, for that exact same reason, being able to divert unnecessary, single-use, plastic, non-recyclable waste is a really great start for getting people involved in taking that first step into conservation and feeling as if they can be a part of the solution as well. So you're exactly right. We brought up the idea and the campaign against Applebee's specifically because they are the largest sit-down restaurant chain in the United States. So with over 2,000 restaurants, if they were able to divert the amount of straws that they gave out by 50%, it would reduce the amount of straws that they use by 180 million per year.
Wow. So,
yes.
And aren't they made from petroleum?
Yeah, absolutely.
And has anyone looked at the health effects of, you know, drinking your liquids through petroleum products?
You know, I'm unaware of any specific research, but I'm sure it's not great.
And just as we're finding out more about, you know, water bottles, if they sit in a car where they're, you know, exposed to heat or the sun, you know, can leach chemicals, you know, into the water. I would think that same thing could happen with straws. But let's just focus on the waste problem. I mean, they don't biodegrade, right? The ones that are made from plastic, which I guess is most of them. And as my husband asked, whatever happened to paper straws if you have to have one?
Yeah, absolutely. Straws do not biodegrade. They photodegrade, which, as we know, means they break down into smaller plastics and most of the time end up in our waterways, which our marine life is now consuming as well.
And is there, you know, are paper straws not widely used? It's
you know,
much.
We've come across a few establishments that do focus on conservation within the hospitality industry, and a few of them have tried utilizing paper straws, but have found that customers don't always enjoy them as much. What we always recommend is to just provide straws only upon request. We found that if a server doesn't automatically throw a straw in your drink, that most of the time, almost all customers will not ask for one.
Exactly. This reminds me of when my daughter and I were back east a couple of summers ago in the middle of summer, and it was hot in New York, Purchase, New York. We were in a Best Western. She was recovering from the swine flu, so I had to pull her out of camp and fly cross country and nurse her back to health. So we were kind of locked up there for 4 or 5 days. Every day they were burning a fire in the fireplace in the lobby of this motel. And it might not have been a Best Western, but something like that, a big chain. And I kept asking, why do you have a fire going, you know, in the middle of summer? And went all the way up to the manager, and the answer was basically, and I suspect it's the same with straws, well, just we've always done that. And when I pressed further, the manager said, well, it's for ambiance. I said, but it's 85 degrees outside and humid. What kind of ambiance is that? I said, do me a favor. I'm going to be here a couple more days, turn off the fire, and see if any guests complain. And, of course, they didn't. And as far as I know, they stopped burning the fire. But it's that same thing. They do it sort of unthinkingly, assuming people want them, or it's because they've always done it that way.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, restaurant managers and owners that we encounter say that same thing. Most customers want straws. It's something that they would expect. And once again, our research has indicated that if you don't provide a straw and that's given upon request, that nearly no customers would notice and very, very few would complain.
And again, since my hubby, Alan Zimmerman, is listening today, one of his pet peeves is plastic coffee stirrers. He says, why can't we use, wooden or something that would not be in a landfill forever? I just sort of take my coffee and I don't put plastic on it, but I shake it up a little bit if I happen to have my own top, or if not, I just use my finger. It gets cooler because that's how much I hate to waste. But obviously, most Americans don't have that sensitivity, unfortunately.
Yeah, we created this campaign with the idea that it can be replicated with a lot of different things. Whereas we're talking about straws, it can be coffee stirrers, it can be napkins, it can be nearly anything. We felt that the most effective way.
I do napkin interventions whenever I see them left behind and they're perfectly clean. Take them and use them for something else. And while we're on it, we will get back to straws. But, the coffee to go, Starbucks syndrome, which, Starbucks is everywhere and there's plenty like it, where people are either getting double cups or, those cardboard rings that you need, whether you need them or not, whether the drink is really all that hot or not. And then there's the plastic lid, and that drink takes maybe 10-15 minutes to consume. So it's not bad enough that we've got all these cups littering the landscape or landfill, but all the accessories that go along with it.
Yeah, a conversation that we've brought up with local coffee shops in our community here in San Diego is to essentially do the same thing, to provide reusable coffee cups for anyone that may be staying in, and to-go coffee cups with people that may be leaving. The idea behind our campaign and organization isn't necessarily to say that we're going to be able to change absolutely everything from today to tomorrow, but that we can divert a huge amount of unnecessary waste and energy, transportation, water, by more effectively utilizing the resources that we do have and cutting down on unnecessary wasteful products.
Do you think most Americans are, aware of, not wanting that straw and it's wasteful, or is it just a few of us, greenies who are overly sensitive to these issues? And again, don't we wish everybody was? Do you hear other people complain in the general public, or do you hear anecdotally that people really don't want them and find it wasteful? Not only don't need them, but find it wasteful.
I don't think that most people are aware about the waste that one single tiny little straw can generate. Once you start pulling out facts, like in the United States, we use 500 million straws per day at a minimum. Then people start saying, oh my God, that's amazing. But, throughout my experience and when I'm out with friends and I always say no straw please, people are a little curious. And when I explain to them why it is that that's something that I do everywhere I go, every time I do so, people say, I never really thought about it that way.
They never really thought about it. That's what I hear.
I've never really thought about it that way. And on top of that, I get a really positive response. I never get people saying, oh, well, that's so hard that you have to do that everywhere you go. I get people saying, I've never really thought about that. And then I see them doing the same thing when they go out.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do with Trash Talk and still trying to do with the Green Front and in between that Eco Talk on America last decade, was really try to encourage Americans to put on the green lenses and look for ways to conserve wherever they are. Obviously we need a nationwide, broadcast show on mainstream outlets, syndicated everywhere to spread this mentality. But I love what you're doing and what your group is doing, and we need more of it, and we need to raise the profile of this, so just so people can be more conscientious.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the impetus, the founding force behind our organization. It's how can we communicate the issues of conservation in a new way that's inclusive and accessible instead of exclusive and difficult to attain. And we, through the one-to-one movement, focused on the direct one-to-one correlation between our positive actions and the positive reactions that they then create. Instead of saying, you need to change absolutely everything about your life, the way that you eat, the way that you get around, the way that you purchase, it's more so saying, you can make small changes today that are going to have positive effects tomorrow, and hopefully that will then empower you to take more actions in the future.
Really, and it's the same kind of argument that we try to use with climate change, which is even though you feel like you're one person or one family or one household, it's a global threat. What difference can you possibly make? If we all feel that way, we won't do anything. If we all realize that we are empowered to make a difference and that every ton of carbon saved is, you know, a little less damage for our children's future, the collective, you know, and that's really the key because, you know, even though for years I've been covering environmental activists and leaders and they're my favorite kind of people, you know, if we don't spread from the margins to the mainstream with these, you know, with this awareness and these actions, it just won't make the difference we need to make.
Right. And much like you, we believe that people are good and want to be good and want to be recognized for doing so, but not everybody has had the benefit of the education that you or I may have had or maybe the conversations that we had. Maybe we had parents that instilled a certain ethic in us when we were younger, and not everybody has had that opportunity. So a second meaning to one-to-one is building those one-to-one conversations, being that positive conversation or role model for that individual who otherwise may have never had an opportunity to think about their impact in their community.
It's funny you mentioned those factors and one's background. I didn't have any of those, and yet I'm, you know, I have an environmental illness. I, in that sense, I'm probably one of the sickest people around, meaning I'm extremely tuned into my environment, and that can be a blessing and a curse in this, you know, wasteful world of ours. But I figure I was born with a green gene, and I know maybe you were too. A lot of, you know, environmental activists I know were just sort of sensitive to this, even on their own, even if they weren't exposed to it. And as I've long said, we just need to clone that gene and implant it in everybody else, and then we can go home.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that we look at it is that really also social justice issues are related to one another. Absolutely. Me and my team, we have a strong sensitivity towards environmental conservation. But similarly, it's no coincidence that we're all deeply passionate about human rights and gender equality and sexual equality and animal and wildlife conservation, right? And the theme rings through and through throughout what we do. And we feel that through our efforts, if we can just positively tease out the things that our community cares about, maybe it's not environmental conservation, but maybe they really do care about cultural diversity, and we can talk about having a healthy environment in your community is going to develop that strong cultural diversity. Maybe that's a way that we can convert people to start having this conversation.
Yeah, that's really what we're talking about, how it is all connected, all those issues, and also how connected we humans, to nature and to our life support system, and yet that seems to have gotten lost, you know, in, you know, America progressing with, you know, everything coming plastic packaged, you know, from meat in the supermarket to how technology kind of makes us, you know, have virtual contact, not real contact, and just increasingly keeping kids, you know, out of nature. You know, the nature deficit disorder, as Richard Liu wrote about in Last Tree in the Woods, all that, you know, has led to a disconnect that really is harming us because we can't and won't focus on preserving and saving what we don't even see as valuable in the first place.
Sure, and it's a fascinating phenomenon, especially within our efforts. As an educational organization, our focus is in working with underserved communities, and oftentimes these are communities that are mostly immigrant, and we're dealing with here in Southern California with a large Latino community, Southeast Asian community, and East African community, and these are people that come from places and not too far removed from generations in which there was a complete reliance upon your natural environment, your shared environment, and all of these people have that, you know, have the history of grandparents that, you know, used to fish their local waterways and used to grow their own foods. And now, as the lower income bracket of U.S. population are forced to live completely disposable lifestyles, and can be some of the areas in which, as you very well know, you'll find the largest food deserts and inability to access information or activism on environmental conservation. So it's a really fascinating issue that we're dealing with here in the United States.
Let's get back to straws for the last remaining minutes, because I really love that you're taking that on. You know, people have focused and been successful in banning plastic bags in, you know, San Francisco and other cities now. I interviewed about 6 months ago a wonderful woman who was an octogenarian, and in her town got plastic water bottles banned so they couldn't sell them. She led that effort. And straws, even though, again, most people do see it as just a small thing, they're so pervasive and they're so unnecessary and they're so petroleum-based. and probably, you know, pricey for restaurants if you add it up every day, every drink served. It just doesn't make sense. And so I'm so glad you're focused on it. And where is the petition located if people want to sign it? I hope they do. And how far along are you in your signature drive and close to goal? How close to goal are you? And then I want to just find out a little bit more about what you do when you go into schools. I see that your movement does focus on K through 12 education.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the petition is located on causes.com, and it's called Divert Applebee's Strive. The petition was launched last Wednesday, and we have 4,300 petition signatures right now, which is something that we're really excited about. But we're really looking to raise the bar and hit a huge amount of people. So once we reach 10,000, what we'll start doing is pitching the idea to media and really starting to put the pressure on larger corporate entities. And it may not be Applebee's that decides to make this change to provide straws upon request, or, you know, God forbid, to not provide straws at all, but it may be another large corporate entity that sees the value, just like you said, the cost-saving values. So at our very conservative estimations, Applebee's would save around $600,000 or $600,000 per year throughout their 2,000 stores by only providing straws upon request. That's a huge amount of money. On top of that, there's massive social equity to be built upon. They get to now say Applebee's or whichever corporate entity cares about our community. We're trying to do our best. We realize that, you know, as a corporate dining establishment, there will be some waste, unfortunately, but we're going to do the best that we can. And that has great value and would attract a bunch of people. So that's essentially what we're trying to promote through the specific petition. On top of that, we've been able to effectively grow this campaign a little more organically within our community here in San Diego, where we have 66 restaurants that have signed aboard the pledge in town. So those 66 restaurants combined help divert over 1.2 million straws per year from our waterways, from our landfills, from our neighborhoods, and that's a really great start. So that's another campaign that we're looking to push, obviously a little easier to work with independently owned establishments than large corporately held entities. I guess your second point, absolutely, education is the cornerstone of our efforts. We feel that working with students who are already inherently so sensitive to issues around our community and to our wildlife, to our shared environment, is a great opportunity for us to reach someone in a time in which they have the passion, creativity, and that captive audience to speak to them about what it is that conservation needs. What we try to do a little differently than most organizations is we focus on conservation efforts and environmental issues in how they affect the target market that we are reaching. So if we're speaking to a group of third graders, we're not necessarily talking to them about buying Priuses and solar panels and shopping at Whole Foods, because third graders don't do any of those things. But they do a lot of things that touch on those same issues, which are food, energy, and transportation. So we talk to them about leaving the windows up and the lights off during the daytime. We talk to them about walking with their parents when they're going for less than a mile or riding a bike. We talk to them about trying to eat foods that are locally grown, or maybe even trying to grow their own foods, or visiting farmers markets. And even if it's things that they can't afford, still to get an idea as to what grows locally within our community. So our educational programs have been very well received. We've been able to reach over 5,000 students now in the last year and a half of our organizational existence, and it's something that we're looking now to replicate and create curriculum that teachers can implement on their own within their own classrooms.
And we're just out of time, but are you looking to go beyond San Diego?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for what you're doing. It's nice to meet a fellow ecomaniac, as I call us, folks, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. And just want to remind people that next time they're out and about, bar or restaurant, you order a drink, maybe we should just tell people to start saying, hold the straw.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Bethany.
Thank you so much. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. If you joined us partway, you can catch the archives at my website, thegreenfront.com, also posted at PRN. I want to thank the studio back at the studio in New York, the PRN folks, Progressive Radio Network, for putting together another great program and doing the great work behind the scenes and for making it possible. We'll be back with a live show next week. In the meantime, stay cool.